Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Pack One, Pick One Podcast. I'm here with Alec Haste.
That's me.
And Mason Lang.
That's me.
I am Joshua.
Yeah, Kruger. Knock that shit off. Get real fucking tired of it.
We're going to continue the Horror Cube series. This might be kind of a wrap-up episode for now.
Might also be a long episode.
It will be probably a longer episode. We're going to divert from talking about the monocolored sections. We left off with red in the last episode. Actually, by the time you guys hear this, the episode about Ryan's Common Uncommon Cube will be up. So we kind of took a short break. We're wrapping up the Horror Cube. We're going to skip, like, delving deeply into green or, like, the multicolored artifacts and all that, because we actually got to draft for the Horror Cube.
Yes, its unveiling finally came out.
Yeah, this very past fun, weekend. Very
for your, what is it, 50th birthday?
So yeah, 50. But we got to draft it twice in a row with a revolving door of people, and we had some surprises, I would say.
It was rough.
Yeah.
I'm going to go ahead and just start by saying it was way more fun than I thought it was going to be, and the caveat to that is that I didn't think it was going to not be fun. I just didn't know what to expect, and oh my god, it was awesome. The drafting was so much fun. The synergies and the interactions were all super sweet, so I actually thought it was a rousing success.
Mason also never got any of the bad beats like some of the rest of us.
Yeah. Oh, I crushed
and didn't see
those
what a
drafts.
Fucking train wreck
smashed
this
them.
Cube is.
Yeah. Well, I don't think the cube is train wreck. I think is
aggressive,
but like you're not far off. I think there are a lot of inherent flaws that we didn't see going in, but these are the kinds of flaws that only come out with this kind of testing. So, and I think that the draft itself was very much a success. People
100%
came up to me.
Oh, the draft was sweet.
Yeah, people came up to me all day and they're like, "Dude, I love the format. The draft itself was so much fun to figure out, like to know what to pick and like see where things were going, and like there were so many possible archetypes I, you know, felt incentivized to go into, and the decks that came out were very sweet. It's super just the results that between matchups were the surprise factor." So
that's true. The stare down in the finals of the first draft.
Yeah.
I'll skip ahead real quick because I know you're going to touch on some of the things that people were complaining about. The finals of the first draft match were me and my friend Chris. I was playing mono black fog brew, witch, like reanimate, like tortured existence, festering newts. It was super sweet. Like it was like a zombie ish style build.
Yeah. You were
staring
like
down Chris with his like three color control mill deck.
Yeah, like almost the dedicated like do nothing until I startle awake you.
Yep, just like startled awake, increasing confusion, you're dead. Like that was his deck.
Yep.
And if you will pay attention later on all the things that anyone complained about, no one ever complained about getting milled to death, all right? So
only happened to me. I was the self-milled deck.
That's not true. He crushed someone else with it too and almost crushed me. I had to board up to 57 cards post-board.
Yeah.
After game one. Just
boo.
Fucking piled that shit in there.
Boo.
Yeah, Alec and I had a conversation before the cast today about how sad it is that you figured out the way to beat the mill deck that is only available to someone in limited. Because in a constructed format, you can't board in as many lands as you want to like make up for the fact that you might die to mill. And limited, you're
great.
Allowed to do that, and it's awful, and I hate it, because
no
one will
not.
Ever
it's
win
not.
With mill anymore.
No. That's totally wrong. Because if you just board in a million lands, then you will absolutely die. I had, like, 10 playable cards on my board.
Right.
That I had just cut.
No,
so
I know,
I
but I'm not saying,
those,
like, the lands themselves are what, like, you know, because, like, in constructed, like, you may have a great sideboard, but, like, if you can't support, mm-hmm. like, some of your off-color stuff with mm-hmm. with an altered land base by adding more lands to support those cards or whatever, you might just have to concede to the fact that you have 15 dead cards in your deck.
I mean, it wasn't until recently you couldn't even do that. Now you can just jam your whole sideboard. It doesn't have to be 60 cards.
Yeah, before you couldn't do that. So, like, someone playing dedicated mill in a format, you know, like, back when they had, like, sanity grinding and stuff, and that was, like, a legitimate strategy. Like, sometimes
at
people
least
just
legitimate.
Yeah, well, yeah. And people just died to mill, and they couldn't do much about it in the post-board games or whatever. And
so
in limited, you can by just, well, here's all the playable cards from my sideboard, plus, like, 10 more lands to support that. Here's an extra 20 cards. Like,
so here's the thing. I agree. That is a totally reasonable countermeasure. But I will say, after going up to 57 cards, Chris played a turn 2 Thermal Alchemist and then a turn 3 Fever Divisions.
Yeah.
Almost burned me to death. Yeah. Just straight dead because I had a bunch of, like, shit that I couldn't catch. I had a bunch of 4s in my hand, like 5s, and almost died to Fever Divisions.
Then you got a Cauldron and just couldn't...
Then I couldn't die to the burn plan. Then I was on board dead to him milling me to death, because he was going to Startled Awake, flash it back again, and, like, Startled Awake me again, right? So, in fact, when that game ended, he said, okay, if you don't have a Festering Newt, I will mill you to death.
Yeah.
But if you do, that's 4 points to the face, and I had a Falconer with Aristocrat and play and stuff, so I was going to just barely be able to Xaxes him, and if I didn't, that turn, he was going to mill me to death.
Yeah.
So I think, like, saying, oh, you can't win with mill anymore because, like, you can board up cards is maybe inaccurate when you can still totally get milled to death in, you know,
yeah,
when your mill spells hit for 13 or 25 with a fucking Increasing Confusion. Like.
Yeah. Well, and I loved that he was playing. It made me so happy to see
him. And Nemesis playing, of Reason.
He had Nemesis, Startled Awake, Increasing Confusion. But it made my heart sing that he had Runic Repetition in his deck to rebuy his Increasing Confusion. That was awesome I hadn't even thought about.
So, I bet you actually use it more on the crappy, what's it called, Dream Twist? I bet you use it on that more. You're like...
Probably. No, like, he had several flashback spells in his deck, mm-hmm. but the fact that he had the line to kill you by Runic Repetitioning his Increasing Confusion back so that he could cast it for 0 and then get you out of his yard again... was awesome, and that was just an interaction that I hadn't even thought about when I included Repetition in the cube.
Runic Repetition is the sweetest card. Yeah.
I put it in as the fail state for the spider spawning deck, so you just don't mill yourself to death and you can just keep spawning.
In our second draft, when I drafted spider spawning slash Bog Brewish combo, I had Runic Repetition Memory's Journey in my Sultai Delirium deck.
Yeah.
And there were times where I'd be staring at my opponent, and we were, like, playing a normal match, but I would have, like, spider spawning, Memory's Journey, Runic Repetition in hand, and I'm like, oh, I have a plan for the next 10 turns of the game, here we go, all right. I think in the last match that I played with that deck against our friend David, which was the first time I had cast spider spawning the whole day.
Yeah, I remember you telling me that. You had
the rest of my matches
multiple times, but never got to cast one.
Never had to cast it. None of my opponents ever put me to the test. I was just smashing everyone in that draft.
I saw you cast it against Jim. For like 7. He had Nishanka on. He had the legendary spider on board, and you're just like, I got more.
I don't remember that, but fair enough. I might have.
You shit on him with Bog Brewish, but...
Maybe that was when I actually cast it and he doubles played me with, like, 5 in the face and I died right away.
So who knew that Bog Brew, the deck, was a real thing? Like,
I did.
So, no, I know you, like, alright, so, I know.
I was prepared.
I know. Almighty Mason Lang has these insane strategies that no one else will concede to, and then he has to punish people with them so that he can prove they're good. And there is truth to that. There is truth to that. I embellish that a bit. Oh no. Alex died.
He couldn't handle it anymore. He just he lost it.
We're going to record the rest of this on the way to the hospital. Alex is,
Hashtag that's a bunch of bullshit.
Hashtag wrong tube.
Yeah. I embellish that. But there is truth to that. Like, you've done that time and again because people don't respect certain strategies or certain cards. And, like, that's something that happens amongst people all the time. One person will have this great idea, you know, or brew or whatever, and, like, it gets shunned by a majority vote, and so then that person either has to draft it, or if it's in a constructive format, they, like, you know, they perfect the strategy, play it against a bunch of opponents, and just prove them wrong, right? And I think that's a big thing that happens in Magic a lot with, like, card design, because you feel you know what the best cards or best strategies are, and people are very narrow-minded when it comes to that, and there's 50,000 plus cards of Magic. You can't tell me that only 1,000 of them are actually really good, you know?
Yeah.
So, Bog Brew, though, like, you're looking at the pieces. A, you have to draft all the pieces. Like, in the cube, we put in 1 Witch, 2 Cauldrons, and 3 Newts, okay? Yep. And just like rarities, like, the Witches are rare, the Cauldrons are uncommon, and Newts were common. So, like, that's kind of where I got those numbers from. And then, but, like, you're looking at the witch and you're like, man, it's a 4-mana investment up front. I can't activate it right away, so I gotta wait for her to untap and not die. And then spend two, tutor up my cauldron.
That comes into play tapped. That's such a killer.
Yeah. And then so then I have to wait for that to untap, and then I can tutor my newt, play my newt, sack it, and that's, so 3 turns we're talking,
And you can't even chump block with the newt. It also comes into play tapped, so you're just stuck. Like, yeah. You have this newt, alright, you can finally use it with the cauldron, yeah.
So, like,
it's not fast.
No, it's not a fast combo. So, like, it's reasonable to understand why people would look at it as this, like, it's not very good. It's very slow. It's very grindy.
Yeah.
You just may never have time to cast it. Turns out, you killed a ton of people with Festering Newts. All day.
In the first draft, I had 2 Festering Newts, both Cauldrons and the Witch. And then in the second draft, I had all 3 Newts. A single cauldron and the witch, which is fine because I actually only like to play one of the cauldrons anyway. For the most part. So I kind of like that there's 2 because you have a shot at it, and I think it's like probably useful in things that aren't just the Bug Brew Witch Festering Newt combo.
Right, sacking dudes for that already are going to give you some kind of value, plus gaining the 4 life.
Like, exactly.
Gaining 4 life keeps you alive to keep your engine going. So
yeah. So I like the fact that 2 exist, but I'll probably only play 1, especially. Well, I might play 2, but only if I don't have witch.
Right.
Overall, though, yeah, it was super sweet. I drafted it both times, and both times it was fucking dope. Yeah.
Well, and I think you get away with the fact that the format is relatively removal light, which is fine. It's not a bad thing, but it makes it a little more difficult to interrupt the combo.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was noticing people were talking about having a problem removing just single threats on the board. And I have a lot of thoughts about that, but it did mean that my Bog Brew Witch was just hanging out and actually getting to activate her tutor ability, which is really dope.
Yeah,
super fun.
Especially
when you have a Memories Journey. I Memories Journeyed all 3 of my Festering Newts back into my deck once. That was, made my deck rock hard. That was, hoo-wee.
That's a lot of value.
But, being that you got to execute this slower, grindier plan, the general consensus, and this is the elephant in the room, the major issue that people brought up to me the whole day was that the format was exceedingly fast. And that aggro was over-supported, which is something that I did not think was going to happen. When I, I've been building this thing for the better part of a year now.
Yeah.
And so we've spent the last, 2 months talking about it and poring over cards and such. And I just thought it was going to be this really slow,
interactive synergy-focused format.
Yeah, and so I'm going to give you some numbers that I ran today. Of the 243 total creatures in just the 5 monocolored sections, 141 of them cost 3 or less. That's 58%. Of the monocolored creatures in the cube
cost three or less. Well, that makes sense, right?
That's a lot.
Is it? Is that way out of balance with your regular cube?
No, my regular cube is designed to be a fast format, and I all the threats in that are so so powerful on their own. Like you and I were talking about this, regular cube or in constructed, where
if something goes unanswered,
it's going to kill you. Yeah, and so those kind of cubes, like a Legacy and Vintage style cube or whatever, you have all the best removal, and you have a lot of it, more so than in a more emulated limited environment like this cube or an actual limited set. Removal is more to premium because there's just so much less of it, and you have to save it for the biggest threats, right?
For the thing
you can't one
really
for one your opponent for 5 turns back and forth and then stick something.
Right.
You have to be able to absorb some damage from their little guys before you
have to get some guys on board, use some combat tricks, try to get people. You have to make your own board so that you can deal with theirs instead of just always relying on whatever you have in your hand to be able to deal with whatever they have on board.
Yeah.
That is going to be a losing proposition.
So almost 60% of the monocolored creatures being 3 or less, format's really fast, right? And to put this to put the nail in the coffin here, give it a little more impact, the average CMC of the whole cube is 2.6.
That is really low.
480 cards, the average CMC is 2.6.
Yep.
That's
We did note when we were going through the various colors that, like, everything was pretty low to the ground. There was not a lot going up on the top end.
Right. I just didn't, like, even knowing all of that, I still felt like with things like, you know, the spider spawning deck and, like, these, and, like, the werewolves tend to, like, have some beef towards, like, the 4 and 5 spot. And, like, there, it just felt like it wasn't going to be anywhere near as fast as it was. Like, people were, like, basically dead to the aggro decks on, like, turn 4 or 5 a lot. You know, and maybe not actually dead, but, like, basically dead on board. Like, there's nothing you could do to catch yourself up. You find yourself
in an unwinnable position.
Yes, like, super fast.
My first deck was a blue-black self-mill deck, and it was awesome. Like, it had all the cool pieces.
Yeah.
I mean, I was missing some of the Stitchwing guys, but I had the Haunted Deads, I had the Amalgams, like...
You had Armored Scobs, you had Screeching Scobs.
Like, I had two of the Dream Twists. Like, this deck did everything I wanted it to do.
Yeah.
And just got fucking rolled by the aggro decks.
Yeah.
Because it took too long to do anything.
Yeah.
Like, my game doesn't realistically start until about turn 3, right? Took a couple turns to set up, you know, fill my yard up, and then now I start playing the value guys.
Yeah.
I was pretty stone cold to Elite Inquisitor off the top. That was kind of rough.
Yeah. Cause I think one of the most feel-bad cards on the whole day was Elite Inquisitor. A lot of people, I mean, it's like that sword problem, right? Just, it doesn't feel good when someone slams something that kind of nuts your whole deck.
Like, and again, in a removal light format, that's more pronounced.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that the card has to go, but it is stupidly good against the majority of decks.
That is true. It is very good. I think the initial reaction for everyone is to, oh, this needs cut, that needs cut, oh, like, that doesn't feel good, that, ooh, geez, wow, put a little bit more lube on it, and come back at me when you calm the fuck down a little bit.
Yeah, there's lot of salt over there was very a specific lot of cards. And
very specific cards, or people who feel like they didn't get to interact. Here's the thing. I don't know how you play in a cube draft, where the average CMC of things is 2.6, and you feel like you didn't get to play Magic, alright? Look, I get it. Maybe you put a bunch of bad cards in your deck that didn't do anything and you got murdered. But come on, like, you can't tell me that if all your cards cost 2 and all their cards cost 2 that you're not going to get to play Magic at least some percentage of the time. I mean, my god.
Yeah, I mean, like, I did, like, as I was walking around the tables in between my really horrible matches.
Same here.
Alec and I sat at the loser's bracket table at the end of both drafts facing each other.
The O2s.
And both of us went 1-5 on the whole day. Out of 6 rounds, we both only won one match, and they were against each other in the loser's bracket.
I went 6-0, and then at the end, me and my friend David played an extra match to decide on this little bet that we had, and he beat me in that one, unfortunately.
Do you have to give him the gift card?
Yeah, I did. I the first draft I sat down, and as a birthday present to Josh, I said, all right, I'll throw up a little prize for the winner of the inaugural, you know, draft, and we'll play for this $25 IHOP gift card that we have, because we go to IHOP all the time. And I crushed that draft, got there, so I won my own gift card back. So then I had to bet it on the second draft, too, and eventually someone slayed me.
Yeah.
Bummer. But.
I did notice as I was walking around the tables, there were a lot of bad draws. Like, I noticed multiple times people were stuck on 2 or 3 lands the whole time and only cast a few spells against their opponents and just died. Like, so I don't know if, that's just variance. That's part of Magic that happens, you know.
Definitely is.
I know myself, like, 2 out of my 3 matches in the last draft, I never hit more than 2 lands the whole time. So just got stranded with cards in my hand the whole time. And I mean, you kept a bad keep against me, Alec.
I started to get really salty when I lost my first 5 fucking matches on the day right in a row. well, in the last one against, Jacob Key, I totally punted. I mean, that doesn't win me the match, but it gives me a game 3.
Mm-hmm.
And then,
When you start tilting and then you're, like, losing games you shouldn't.
Yeah, and then I started to get a headache and I was just generally butthurt. I mean, that first deck was so sweet, and to go 0-3 with it was, like, a kick in the balls.
Yep.
Because I just thought that deck was, like, the bee's knees, and
I feel
it just didn't work out. So, and then the next time I played an aggro deck, and that lost 2, And I was like, well, this is just not working out.
There's nothing you can do. Everything you do is wrong.
Yeah. it was bad times. But I still think the cube is sweet, but I do think it has some glaring issues.
Yeah.
And despite some of the salt heard around the table and all that thing, now that we've had some time to look at it objectively, I think there are some very obvious, this is okay, this is not okays. 2.6 is alarming.
Yeah, that's,
it was slightly low. Are you sure? Are you sure other cubes aren't too big? Maybe that's the problem. No, I'll preface this all by saying that I think a lot of my advice is going to involve the word stop whining so much, but we'll get to that when it comes up.
You also went 6-0, the rest of us didn't.
That's true. That's like,
and there are a few times when you probably should have died and didn't.
That's fair. That's probably true.
What I'm saying, Mason, is that you need to shut the fuck up.
Oh, is that what you're saying?
So that the rest of us can tell you how this actually works.
Yeah.
Okay.
A few of us here down on Earth, guys, not on Cloud 9. You guys can give
me all of your really compelling reasons that everything should change and we need to handicap the cube to fit with other people's expectations, and I'll tell you why it's fine. As is. It's good. Or why I think that it's closer to fine than I think was the general consensus on the day of. Or maybe, you know. I don't think there needs to be, like, these huge glaring changes, especially with all of 2 reps under our belt. And the fact that it's such a wildly different limited format that people just aren't going to be used to drafting and playing this format in this way, and therefore people are going to be, you know, drafting bad decks or not building and playing the things that they should be in order to survive the aggro decks or have something to do late game.
I'm just saying, I played against the other control deck, and I couldn't land an Emrakul.
Are you talking about when you were the self-mill deck against his mill deck?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a very tenuous match. It's like playing Death Shadow against Burn, man. Like, that's a very...
Yeah, but the first game, he didn't even know it was mill. Like, and he didn't die to it.
He only showed me the Nemesis... And that just barely got me for Xaxes. But at that point, I had, like, 6 or 7 lanes in play, and I still couldn't cast the Emrakul. You know?
Emrakul's expensive, man.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm just saying, you'd think you'd be able to play it eventually. And that was the deck to get all the different shit in my yard. No Planeswalkers is rough. I was like, this card will never cost 7.
Yeah.
Because it just can't.
Not having any Planeswalkers means that it can be really tough to play a sort of tap-out style control deck. You're kind of just tapping out for things that aren't Planeswalkers to try to get some presence on the board is just asking your opponent to punk you. Like, just, hey, will you please do something that fucks up whatever I did last turn? Like, please, that would be great. It would really help me out in my life if everything that I did last turn just got nutted by whatever, like, combat trick or hasty creature that you have. That's like, kind of rough.
I mean, that's fair. This is also the nature of, like, you know... This is one of the things that Jim brought up long before we ever did the draft, was the whole theming thing. Like, once you start narrowing your ability to add certain card types or, you know, just certain cards in general based on a theme, you know, things are going to get a little wonky. And, like, this is one of those areas that, like, we can tell, right? Yeah,
fuck it. Planeswalkers suck anyway. Fuck those cards.
Says the guy who pushed for Tybalt in every single episode of this cast when we started doing
this. Tybalt would be the best. It would be a godsend, really. Any problem you have with the cube so far could be answered with a timely Tybalt, but I'm not one to drone on and on about the same thing and listen to myself talk. I won't bring it up anymore. Alright, fine. I'll bring it up every single time we talk about everything, and we'll see how that goes.
I mean, in your defense, this time it was, in fact, Josh who brought it up.
Yeah, that's true. I knew what I was doing. Why did I do that?
Give it to him.
All right, so we feel like aggro might have been a little oversupported. And some of the evidence to support that claim was that our friend Andrew Swift was sitting directly on my right, and we drafted the exact same deck. And both of us had... We were both in red-white humans, and he got into it about 6 picks into the draft... in pack one. Nice. And I was clearly in it from the get-go. My pack one pick one was Champion of the Parish.
And yet he had no way of telling that.
Yeah. And well, he was on my right, so it wasn't, you know, yeah. Yep. And but he got into it a little bit late, and we both drafted the same deck. and we both had at least 10 playables that we had to cut, like that we couldn't play because we had so many playables. Yeah. And there was still another green-white humans deck in the room, and there was a black-white aristocrats deck, which was also mostly humans. So,
yeah.
Even if aggro itself isn't the real problem, it may be that humans was so widely supported that there was no reason not to just pick whatever ones you saw come by that could fit in your deck. And which is a good thing if we were talking about like Tribal Cube, where you want all of your tribes to be super wide instead of very narrow. But in this, where I'm trying to focus on very specific two-color decks or very specific archetypes within decks, having something that wide that was also very low to the ground warps the format a little bit, I think.
Sure.
I don't know.
I think there was probably some kind of a drop-off. To say that all of you guys had... I know this is probably a little bit of hyperbole, but to say that everyone had, you know, 10 extra playables that they weren't playing, some of those were probably more playable than the others, right? Like, it's not
you have to make cuts, and you have to be able to make those kind of decisions. So, like, sure, there are cards that were just objectively better in our decks than other ones, but we had enough, I should say, instead of playables, we had... Both Swifty and I had at least 10 cards that were in color that we would not have minded in our decks if we could fit them.
Perfect. You were well set up to fight the mill deck then.
Jesus Christ. Yeah, it was the same deal. When I built the red-white humans deck the second time through, my deck was sweet. I had way more cards than I needed, and now it's sad to get rid of all of them.
Yeah.
You know, like, and I even wanted to cut Baleful Liege at one point, which seems... wrong, right?
That
card, all three lieges that are in the cube proved to be insane throughout the whole
super
day.
Super powerful.
Except I never played it.
I got Digger.
Oh, really?
Nope.
Oh,
I died every time at 4 mana.
It
costs
4.
It costs 5.
Really?
Yeah. Every time I died at 4 mana. Yeah. That's why I say that I didn't get enough turns to play it. But...
Yeah. Right.
Oh, wacky.
His balls is what it was.
There's also a really large density of one drops. Across the five monocolors, there's 29 one drops, which is kind of a lot. Now, compared to like my Legacy Cube, that's actually not that far off. Sure. But in a format like limited, where your one drops in like a set, your one drops tend to not be that great. Whereas in this, all of the one drops were super good.
And they're all aggressive. There are no Land of War Elves, there are no Birds of Paradises.
What about Stern Constable?
That card is aggressive.
It can be, yeah. It plays into your aggressive plan.
It absolutely is supposed to be. That is not a control card. Discarding cards is not good for you.
What if you're playing like a Madness deck? What if you're playing Madness?
Yeah, Madness decks tend to be more aggressive.
I'm getting so yelled at right now, it makes me feel super uncomfortable. So why don't you calm the fuck down?
Adults. Well, I'm sorry, right, Mason. Jesus. I'm in his camp.
Like, why don't you stop saying stupid shit? How's that sound?
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Why don't you stick this cock in a really exciting fucking episode?
Okay.
This is good. This is healthy discussion. We have two.
Listen,
we have two
if your opponent plays a fucking grizzly bear and is trying to jam it down your throat and attack with it, then play your own goddamn grizzly bear and block with it.
Yeah, you can do that.
Profound fucking insight.
You can do that because there's 29 of them at once. You can totes do that.
Great. If you play,
no, not
if
great.
If you play a Reckless Wave and intend on getting in with it, and your opponent slams a Doom Traveler or a Festering Newt or a fucking shitty green idiot,
well, if they slam a Doom Traveler, that Reckless Wave
Raven
will
Inspector,
never flip over.
Yeah, get fucked. Obviously, if your opponent plays any one drop, you can play any other one drop in the cube and trade with it, or you can completely nut
That's
it on
not
turn
true
two
either.
And play some stupid two. Mana card.
That's not true either. Like my fucking the 2/3 flip card, the one that's white and it flips into red, the mob.
Yeah, Tom Countdown Miner. Yes.
Yeah, you can't do that.
It also doesn't attack until like turn 3.
Turn 3, but still it's insane.
That 2/3 attacking on turn 3 sounds really nuts. Wow, how could you possibly beat that?
I'm not saying they're unbeatable. I'm saying it's too aggressive, Stoop. Like,
whoa. That's abrasive. All right, you need to calm down.
How many times have you ever told someone to calm down and they then calmed down?
Never. Once in my life. I'm hoping to change that.
Is it working?
I don't know. Do you feel calmer?
Can I suggest a different strategy?
No, you may not. Moving on. All right.
Both of you are too hostile. Let's reel in the feelings a bit.
These are not feelings, guys. These are objective data points that I'm going to shove down his throat whether he fucking likes it or not. So you stay out of my way.
Look, it's not... stopping yourself from dying is not that difficult. It can be difficult, but it's not difficult because your opponent played a 1-drop and then played a 2-drop. It's a problem because of, like, the 3s and 4s that they play. The reason people die quickly and they feel like they didn't get enough chances to react are because once you get... when you don't have any ways to punish someone for overextending on the board, they get to just roll their aggro creatures into each other, right? So instead of having a 1-drop 1-1 and a 2-2-2-2, a 2-drop 2-2 and a 3-drop 3-3, whatever, then you slam your 4-drop and it gives all your creatures +2/+2, and shit, now you're, like, completely overrun. Now everything feels unfair, even though everything that happened up until this point didn't matter. If you get hit for 6 within the first 3 turns of the game, congratulations, you're still at, like, basically 3/4 of your life total. It doesn't matter. You can stabilize at 5. Like, that's fine. There aren't that many burn spells in this cube. But when you have these, like, anthem-type effects or big payoffs to having a board full of creatures, those are when you really start dying. And there are a lot of them in here. There are a ton of cards that pay you for having a big board.
Yeah.
Cards like everything from Blood Artist to Thalia's Lieutenant to fucking...
we had Always Watching. Kanawha
Militia Captains.
Yeah. Sure.
And
yeah.
Anything and everything. Kessig Malcontents, right? Jogskull Captains. There are a million Lords. And Lords lead to what I always consider to be a rolling aggro deck. And that is you just roll your creatures every single turn as long as you never get punished for putting them on the board. They keep right. building and building and building until you've got this massive boulder that can't be stopped. It's not hard to nut someone's 1 and 2 drops. They play some 1 and 2 drops, you play a slightly bigger creature, or you have something that trades in combat well, and suddenly they have no good attacks. Which is fine. They'll sit there with their creatures not attacking until they have something over the top to slam on you, whether it's a...
except that never happened.
The one that absolutely did happen, because... I'm talking about the aggressive player having a trump to get their creatures in. The card that I kept bumping into was fucking Champion of Lamphold. That card was fucking me up all day. Yeah, I played against it in both drafts, and it was very, very powerful. It's very hard to, like, block with a bunch of shitty festering newts when you're on a place of Champion of Lamphold, right? Like, it's not a great day.
No, I'm more referring to the situation that you're talking about. Since all these decks were so painfully aggressive, it was... Were you on the play was huge.
Yeah.
If you could spike those game ones, you know, your game threes were insane.
Yeah.
For the most part. Especially if you were the aggro player. Like, every time I was on the play, which was not a lot, which is unfortunate, but every time I was on the play, like, I fucking dick rolled people. I felt like I was unstoppable. And then the second I go on the draw, I just got shit on. Like, just all this damage coming in, and I was like, well, I can try to block, and then I just get fucking completely blown out by, like, one thing, and then, like, my game plan just fell apart. You know, I am the aggressive deck, so blocking is not supposed to be my strength. But that's what I mean, when I don't think that's a bad thing, but I think we need some more support so that it's not just, let's smash our Barbie dolls into each other and see which one comes out unbroken.
But that's just a really normal part of basic limited Magic play.
Sure, and that's, and that's guys, what we're emulating, but I think we can do a little better with it.
Yeah. Well, and I don't disagree with the fact that, like, I feel like there was very few ways to punish people for just slamming guys in play, right? Yeah. Like, there was almost no reason not to just cast a card, like, cast a dude or multiple dudes every single turn the entire game, you know, because nothing could hold you back.
Mm-hmm.
So,
that's definitely true.
And you guys brought that up to me when we were going over white. You're like, how come there's no wraths? Like, I just don't see any wraths. And I didn't realize how big of a deal that was going to be in this kind of a format, you know. Because usually you don't... well, you just don't see wraths. No.
I was looking at my milk.
You weren't. You made a face, and I know what it meant. But just hear me out.
Like, he was trying to put it down real soft.
He was trying to put it down really softly so it didn't make a noise.
Oh, I thought you were how could he not know why there wasn't, you know...
that's not what I was doing at all.
The man's trying to eat his fucking Oreos, and you gotta give him shit about it?
I'm a very sensitive individual.
Let's I mean, if you're gonna shit on him, do it righteously.
So, alright, so I didn't realize, because, like, when emulating a normal limited environment, Wraths tend to only be okay, right? And there's...
No, what? Wraths are always
Wraths are dope.
Nuts in limited. They're Wraths complete are very good. Fucking blowouts.
Okay.
They just never exist. Like, they're always at rare, they're hard to find, and the one time that you get, you can't play around it,
yeah.
And then when you do, and you play into it, you're just like, shit.
Yeah.
Yeah, Wraths are always just completely insane and limited.
Huh. In my experience, they've always just sat in my hand forever, the end. So.
Fair enough.
Get better, nerd.
Well, that probably means he was winning his games so handily that he didn't need to Wrath.
No, my limited track record is garbage. Like,
oh, well, then you're garbage.
That's fair. I don't know. I mean, like.
Rough.
That's a topic for another day, but...
Okay, moving on. Your bad limited record, or what?
No, how garbage are you? We're going to do an episode where you just shit on me the whole time about how bad I am on Magic.
Josh's bad limited record, yeah.
That's gonna
be, and how Mason is never threatened by anything.
But I didn't realize that there should have been a larger emphasis on playing Wraths in the cube, mm-hmm. right?
They at least have to exist to put people...
And I think it's because... Sorry, I don't mean to cut you off, but, like, I think this is actually going back to your point, Mason, about, like, somebody plays a 1-drop or a 2-drop or whatever, and you're supposed to play 1-drop or 2-drop or whatever to just jam against them and, like, block or take care of them or whatever. And I didn't include a lot of Wraths or ways to punish people on board because when looking over the cube, at a general glance, all of the creatures seem like they're all on the same level in terms of, like, ability to just take out other creatures in combat.
I think that's mostly true.
And so it was just very surprising to a lot of us to see how steamrolled people were getting by all of the aggressive decks in the room.
Well, so, I think that's because if I play a 1-drop and you play a 1-drop to net it, maybe I can get an attack, maybe I can't, right? Maybe my 1-drop attacks favorably in yours, but whatever. If I play a 2-drop and you play a 2-drop, fine. We're keeping a parity. And this can go on up until, you know, it may seem like the aggressive player at that point is getting shut down because they keep not being able to attack. But in fact, in that play sequence, the defensive player is the one who's getting put on the back foot and is in the uncomfortable position because they need to tap out every turn just to try to stabilize the board and risk their opponent doing goddamn anything to them, right? Whether that's a removal spell to allow them to get in a bunch of good attacks, whether it's a combat trick that they can't possibly play around because they're tapped out to, you know, just try to put something on the board, or whether it's some kind of anthem effect that just completely just
negates
destroys them, right? Anytime someone taps out for a liege or something to just pump their whole team, now suddenly you don't have any good blocks. No matter what's going on, you're either going to be taking big hits to the face, or you're going to be losing mana trading your larger creatures for what should be their smaller ones. So when you get totally steamrolled like that in the middle of a game, it's probably because as you're sitting there trying to, like, put things onto the board, if you're not building toward whatever endgame you have while also putting these idiots onto the board, then you're just waiting until your opponent finds that thing that's going to kill you. And I think a really great example of that is something like... the Selfless strategy. So if I've got some Screeching Scobs and some Armored Scobs and whatever, and I'm playing them in order to try to hold off my opponent's inevitable onslaught, then they are building me toward whatever my inevitable late game is, whether it's Spider Spawning or Rise from the Tides or whatever I got working.
And Haunted Dead.
But if they're not, if they're just like crappy dudes that don't do anything, and or maybe I'm not paying myself with a Spider Spawning or whatever it is, then I'm just waiting. I'm waiting to get blown out, which is not a good position to be in, especially in a, you know, higher power limited format.
Yeah.
Because if you wait long enough, eventually you will get blown out. Even if your opponent's aggressive draw was not perfect. Like, if you give them a bunch of time, they will eventually find whatever is in your deck that's going to punish you. So.
Yeah, I definitely think there were some tough beats. No doubt about it. You know? I mean, I certainly got some. It happens, but it just felt like there were so many unfavorable positions when you were not the aggressor.
Sure.
And it's just too easy. You know, I don't think it being removal light is inherently bad.
Yeah.
I think the low mana threats are just like, I mean, you mentioned the concentration of one drops in a legacy cube, them not being that far off is fine, because you've got, what, like five mana guys, a Birds of Paradise, like,
yeah.
The red ones might be aggressive, but for the most part, the one drops have some sort of utility. They're not just meant to hit people.
Yeah.
All of these one drops in this cube hit people, except
Stern Constable.
No, that's meant for hitting people.
I know.
It's meant for hitting people, but not directly.
Yeah. No, it was Festering Newt is the one that's kind of not, and, I mean, I guess you could, but
yeah. For
the most part, no, that's for shitting on kids with cauldrons, which is exactly what happened, and I think that's awesome, and I think people should be sad when they lose to it because it's going to stay.
Yeah, it is. That's already, like, I didn't get to play it, and I really wanted to play it going into both drafts, but just chose to do other things instead, and
right.
And that just happens based on what you see in the draft. So
I mean, I'm just looking over some of the other one drops, and like it seems like every color has something going on. Like what over in green we've got a Gnarlwood Dryad and a Young Wolf and an Uvenwald Tracker and an Absence Pilgrim. Like those cards can all easily either trade off and give you some kind of 2-for-1 in the case of like Young Wolf or Gnarlwood Dryad can trade off and get you a big mana advantage because you can eat something very large. You got Doom Travelers over here that, I mean, get in for the beats for a whole 1 damage. Not really that impressive. A Thraven Inspector that can eat a bunch of the 1 drops that are in the cube. A Stern Constable that can keep you alive if you've got any kind of madness synergy. Over in blue, there's actually Fuck All, but that's because all the
1 drops. Yeah, blue had the lowest. It was just 2 Mausoleum Wanderers, which are meant to beat. Like, those guys were, I mean, that's the aggressive.
Those are sweet. And then over in black, you've got, like, a couple of Gravecrawlers, obviously, and then standing in glaring contrast to those are all these Festering Newts and Viscera Seer, like, Cryptbreaker. So, I mean, I don't know, like, at least over half the one-drops are, like, trying to get at you, but there are a bunch of one-drops that are really good defensive creatures. In the second draft,
and people may not have valued them or saw them. I mean, that's the thing, too. And this isn't all about just the one-drops.
Think about it. Viscera Seer is not a good defensive creature.
Yeah.
No,
Viscera Seer is an engine.
Yeah,
Festering Newt in reality is not a great defensive creature.
Sure, it is.
I mean, it's fine
if your opponent plays a 1-drop and attacks you with it, and then like plays a 2-1 or any kind of thing that could possibly die to a Festering Newt. Like, then what are they going to do? Attacking your Festering Newt? That sounds terrible.
I mean, they also have like a post combat main phase. In fact, I would like to emphasize to those of us who listen to this, don't forget about the post-combat main phase. I saw a few Festering Newt blowouts because we forgot about the post-combat main phase. That's very important.
That makes me sad because, at least in our first draft, was probably the largest group of stellar players in our play group.
Some goodies.
Yeah. Now, that's not to say that the people in second draft aren't good Magic players.
Garbage.
Yeah. But
sorry, not garbage.
But, like, you know, we had some of the people like that I've known that have been playing Magic way longer than me, all in the first draft, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, no. So, like, you know, none of those people should forget about the post-combat matrix, especially with Festering Newts glaring at you from the board. So,
God, Wolfgang Captive?
I guess just, like, prioritizing how you need the game to play out is a big part of that. Yes, Viscera Seer is not the thing you're going to be using. It's an engine, it's a utility piece, it's a combo piece, whatever it is to you. It's not for blocking. But when your opponent's beating at you with a Kessig Prowler, hey, guess what? It looks pretty appetizing for this Viscera Seer to transform itself into a Tragic Slip all of a sudden, and then you kill off their guy, you know? I mean, there's just, to me, that sounds like a pretty reasonable thing to do. And if you're going to sit there and you're going to go, hey, this is my Viscera Seer, I can't just be trading it off all willy-nilly with these one-drops, then you know what? You deserve to die. That's your fault. You deserve whatever beating is coming your way.
I think folks didn't anticipate it being that aggressive. I think they're right for doing so, and I think it is too aggressive. You know, it's way too low. It's too fast.
Well, it's too low or too fast if we want other things to be viable.
And maybe there is some amount of bias to this, because nobody built Burning Vengeance.
Yeah.
It wasn't in... there was one in the first draft, and yeah, the second one, they I think
all three of them were in Pack 3. All three of them
were in Pack 3, and one person soaked all of them up and didn't play them.
Yeah. So
we're not leaving an option.
The verdict's still out on whether or not Burning Vengeance is good.
Yeah.
It probably is, right? I mean, maybe. Now it's
probably fucking great.
I hope so, because I'm starting to think that taking a turn to play a two-man enchantment that doesn't do shit, and then two spells to fill... Yeah. Is that not what I said?
You said two.
Yeah. Three-man enchantment, and then spending turns one and two setting it up. That's three turns we didn't do jack shit. I just hope you're not dead by that.
Sure.
Or, like, put into a position that is unwinnable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, we'll see. I mean, I really want to play it. I think it looks super savage. But if it's not good, or if something needs to be retailored... in fact, I think if we started making things go up a little more and, you know, incentivize people not to just jam dudes into other dudes, I think the Burning Vengeance deck is largely unchanged, right? Like, what do you have to do to that, right?
Yeah.
So
I think that's also probably one of the best ways to fight those decks, because, I mean...
Yeah, you throwing can certainly... two damage around is probably eventually... When you kill enough of their shitters, you only have to play one. Like, I would love to play the 6-mana 6-9 thing. Scab Goliath.
Yeah,
Scab Goliath. Oh, have that be my only guy.
Oh, in the Burning Vengeance deck? Yeah.
I mean, I'm also Grixis, so I can have Homicidal Seclusion. Just kidding, guys. He's a 9-10 with Lifelink.
Hey-o. That sounds great.
It's probably good.
So, all right. So there's a possibility that we either need to up the curve just slightly on some of the aggressive decks, so that there's a larger top end, and or things that in the middle of the road that can actually punish people for overcommitting to the board.
Mm-hmm.
And then in addition to that, there were a lot of people talking to me about there being like once people just stuck permanents, certain things like. You're like always watching, or Macias, things like that. There wasn't a lot of answers to those things, and actually, I'm not talking so much about dudes. Okay. I'm talking more about like artifacts and enchantments, like your bubbling cauldrons. Nobody just blew up your bubbling cauldrons all day, right?
That's true. No one
ever. And so I did some math on that, like because people were like, I think there's just not enough answers to very problematic permanents, and so there's 80 artifacts and enchantments in this cube, right? Uh-huh. So 80 of the 480. Okay. Are non-creature permanents.
Okay.
There's 6 total answers. There are 6 cards in the whole cube that say destroy target artifact or enchantment or non-land permanent.
So that's like...
That's egregious. That's atrocious that's design that's on my great. Part, and I am ashamed that I did not catch that before we did this.
That's great.
So
you're talking about cards like the O-rings and shit too, right?
Yeah, there isn't any.
We didn't put in the Banishing Light.
Well, you know how we mentioned putting in Banishing Light, and then Josh went, that's a very good idea. I'm not going to do that, though. Yes.
Yeah, no, there was no... Yes. No.
Oh, I thought we...
No.
I thought you were aware of how stupid that was.
Get fucked, Josh.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
I didn't start, like, supervising you.
Well, I'm pretty sure, if I remember correctly, he might have even mentioned in one of the episodes, I think he mentioned, like, I'm not going to change any of the stuff we're talking about now, but I'll think about it.
Yeah, I did.
Yeah, so that's great.
Apparently I didn't think hard enough, so...
No. I've also demanded that he trade me his Mana Crypt and his Soul Ring, because he's no longer allowed to have the privilege.
They're only set aside. They're not permanently cut.
They're
on
the board, man. Jeez, you know how many sweet... You know Sarkhan Unbroken's on the board, too, but I don't talk about it every podcast. Hashtag bring back Sarkhan.
I gave you Knuckleblade.
Knuckleblade's sweet. Knuckleblade's a good guy.
Yeah.
Knuckleblade's a good man.
So that's a glaring oversight. That needs to be fixed. And that goes hand in hand with the, like, besides the aggressive thing or the speed of the format being brought up to me a lot, was the just lack of overall efficient interaction.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, like, a large part of that was probably, like, I can't interact with these dumb permanents that these people are just, like, grinding me out with, right? Like,
mm-hmm.
I have no naturalize for this Bubbling Cauldron anywhere in the cube. Never saw one. Like, how am I going to deal with this stupid thing that's just going to eventually kill me?
Yeah.
Like, poor Britcher. Dying to a Festering Newt over the course of 5 turns. because all you did was drain him for four.
Yep, and that every was great. Turn on Festering Newt, turn two Bubbling Cauldron. That was a good game, let me tell you.
Like,
someday, that really what happened?
Yes. He drained him
really
for four.
Close, interactive, like, really gnarly games, and then game three, I just played turn one Festering Newt, turn two Bubbling Cauldron, turn three Tortured Existence, and domed him for four, and killed his guy. Then next turn, I Tortured Existence back to my hand, played it, domed him, killed his guy. He kept playing two ones, and just so every single turn, starting on turn three, until he was dead, I don't know, five turns later.
Literally five turns, because you
just killed five
him.
Creatures, and 20'd him, and gained 20 life.
Damn, girl.
It was delightful.
That's rough.
And he didn't even quit the draft, what a trooper.
Yeah, so, you know, my apologies to Britcher and those other fallen soldiers for not providing you with the tools you needed to succeed against the Bog Brew deck.
You go get it. Like, it's one thing to tell people they did it wrong when you're like, well, you didn't even draft any of the natural host effects during the draft. You didn't prioritize those high enough.
Right.
Now you're being punished for it. That's a fact of life. But you should have drafted them. Fuck off. All right, you. Jesus. Why?
So, yeah.
Six.
Yeah, glaring oversight. So, and I don't know that, like, this kind of segues a little bit into another point that our friend Jim brought up to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't necessarily agree with everything that Jim was saying about, like, he had this theory that the answers to certain things need to be more powerful than the things themselves. And Alec and I had a discussion about this before we sat down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He mentioned that to me too, but he was mostly yelling a lot. There was that vein coming on his head. I didn't pay attention, so I'm not really sure.
Oh, where God he was bless you, Jim. But yeah, so yeah. We didn't agree, but he did, and I just want to mention it. Like, he talked about there needing to be some more, like, graveyard interaction, or, like, things that stopped the graveyard decks because there just wasn't. He felt there wasn't enough efficient answers to those types of things. He wanted something like Rest in Peace. And I don't think that straight deck hosers and what appear to me is like sideboard-specific cards.
Uh-huh.
I don't like cards like Rest in Peace because they are dedicated for one matchup and that's it. And I don't like cards like that. I like cards like we have in Thraben Heretic, and he kept telling me, oh, this card's not good enough. But it's your bear that goes in your aggro deck that sometimes gets to hose other decks.
It was good
decks.
For me.
If I said that it wasn't good enough, then past me as an asshole. That card is great.
Yeah.
That card is delightful. Yeah, I actually like sideboard cards just in general, because I think at some point in the draft you should take a look to your left. Like, you should take a look at what you've drafted and think to yourself, like, well, okay, I've got roughly the number of playables that I want, and I've got, you know, an entire last pack to go. I can look at, what am I going to play in my sideboard? Is there a splash that I want to make? Is my fixing good enough? You know, you can start supplementing your picks. I think there's something to be said for being able to do more in the draft than just worried about what your 23 cards are going to be. And I think sideboard cards are fine for that. But I agree with you. Deck hosers are the worst.
Especially in an environment like this. Like, if I'm playing self-mill, if I'm playing that first deck I built,
mm-hmm.
and he slams a Rest in Peace at any point in the game.
Yeah.
I just hard lose right where I'm standing.
Yeah.
You know,
and that's not fun interactive magic, right?
No, like, so, and the idea that the answer should be better than the cards themselves, it's like, that's ridiculous. A, I think it's difficult to actually do that.
Yeah.
I mean, like, Doomblade still costs 2 mana.
It's not that difficult, right? You just make all the creatures terrible and put in, like, nothing but Mono Wrath of Gods and, like, sick of
creatures
and planeswalkers.
I guess theoretically.
If everyone's playing with Grizzly Bears and you're playing with Grizzly Bears and Jace the Mind Sculptor, then, you know, your answers are better than the threats.
Yeah.
So that's fair.
Yeah, but that just seems ridiculous to me. Like, we want to have an emulation, not a simulation, of a smaller limited environment. And to put in cards that you see in, like, legacy sideboards is probably a bit much.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we talked about it being removal light. If you wanted to add some more removal, you could.
Yeah.
I think it's fine the way it is. And, I mean, maybe we could use some more efficient guys and more efficient answers. But fucking, utter hosers just seems like the worst.
Yeah.
I mean, Isn't that just poor design?
I
feel
like I think that asking for graveyard hosers and a graveyard-themed cube is really, like, kind of silly thing to do.
Yeah.
Especially when you look at the average CMC of the cube. If you're working with a cube that has that's very low to the ground, then I think you are faced with an even more unique problem during the draft, and that is how are you going to spend your mana? And I saw a lot of different people with a lot of different answers to that throughout the draft who were doing well. And they were all managing to tap out on most of their turns, like spend all their mana really efficiently, and do things, regardless of how late the game went, right? And there aren't too many draw spells, so you're not just going to be, like, refueling yourself constantly and always having these cheap cards to play. But even if you are, you're going to run out of stuff to play because everything costs such a low amount of mana. But flashing back spells is expensive as fuck. That's a really good way to spend your mana. Having any kind of spell land, that's a really great way to spend your mana. And having, like, permanents on the board with activated abilities, that's a really great way to spend your mana. And I saw a various combination of all of these things going through. But really what I mostly saw was everything was fairly cheap, and the ways that people were spending their mana in the late game was through using things in their graveyard. And I think that it draws attention to the fact that in the late game, you're not looking at the cards that you're playing so much as the synergies that you're, like, using and abusing. And most of those synergies come out of the graveyard, at least from what I saw. So, when you say, I want a rest in peace, what it sounds like to me is you're saying is, I don't want anything going on later in the game. I want just the cards we had in our hands and nothing else, you know. Outside of the fact that it just hoses entire decks, which is shitty, it also just kind of takes away any of the fun engine building that you've spent, you know,
the entire game. Well, turns the game into a top deck war after turn four.
Yeah. To me, especially with, like, the way that I saw a lot of these things playing out, like, hosing people's graveyards, I mean, you're not... What are you going to do late if you have nothing to spend your mana on and you can't use any of your resources? Like, that's like saying, you know, really what we need in this cube is, like, 7 or 8 Armageddons. Like, that's really where I think we need to be at.
Right. No, I thought the bear thing was fine. There's that...
bear thing?
Yeah.
Oh, Thraven Heretic. Yeah,
Heretic.
The grizzly bear.
That was dope. And kind of what I was talking about, you know, because we saw in the last standard that graveyards just went completely unchecked, right?
Yeah.
And that's not okay, right? An Amonkhet, or whatever, they previewed the cycling one that, like, gets, like, 3 cards.
That card's
nuts. Yeah,
that's the kind of thing you want in something like this. Not a straight fucking hoser.
Yeah.
You know, it's an efficient, reasonable answer.
Yeah.
You know, could we have more of those in here? Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
And we should be considering that.
Yeah.
And I think that some of the bigger decks need more tools for that late game. If only coming out of the graveyard, as Mason noticed, maybe we need to put in something bigger.
Right.
Yeah, you know? I do agree that, like, there should be a few big spells to be cast. Maybe a couple big reanimator targets or a couple, like, you know... Was there not an Unburial Rites in here still?
No.
God damn it. I hate you so much.
I know.
It's the best card ever.
You never have to sell me on Unburial Rites.
Then why is it never in any of your cubes?
Because I didn't want a reanimator strategy. I just didn't.
Yeah, we talked about this.
Yeah.
I really butthurt about it.
Yeah, and I love Reanimator. It's my favorite way to play Magic. But I was trying not to have the most obvious thing in the graveyard cube. Like, I wanted to explore other avenues, at least on the onset. So,
now... You had to be an artist.
I mean, that is my trade. And it's my curse.
Too funny. Too funny. That's fine. I was thinking, like, in
good
a strategy...
artists create, the best artists steal outright.
Ooh, that's a good one.
And don't get
the West Wing.
And still don't get noticed until they're dead.
It's fair. We can. I mean, you're, like, knocking on death's door anyway, right?
Yeah. So yep. I mean, I'm over 50 now.
God, that's rough. That's brutal. Why are you hanging out with, like, a?
Did you sit behind Jesus in the third grade?
Yeah, he was a dick.
I believe that. So
I heard he turned his life around, though.
Oh, what a nice guy. Oh, my God. Oh, goodness.
Look what it got him.
Still only noticed in death. That's rough.
Yep.
Ugh, God.
Hey, man, at least they wrote a book about him.
Life of a Carpenter, let me tell you. All right. Moving on.
So, I don't know. Yeah. Interaction, efficient answers.
I thought there were, like, a couple of removal spells that I would have really liked to see. Like, I thought that it was a shame if there was no Fatal Push in a limited format where it felt like it would be really easy to turn on Revolt.
Yeah.
With, like, the various clues and, like, five Evolving Wilds, just, like, random stuff that was kind of floating around. The bounce lands.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it would have been... And, like, just the need for being able to kill off, you know, small creatures seemed pretty, pretty big. I thought it was a real shame that you didn't include Fatal Push. I want to see you do your little number breakdown on this cube with Fatal Push. Oh, it kills 85% of the creatures, and when it's revolted, it kills every single one in the entire cube. Good work. High five.
Ugh. Well, it doesn't kill Grave Titan.
That's fine. True.
Whatever.
And I did see some salt revolving around Grave Titan.
Which I think was unwarranted.
So, bombs ruin games. Otherwise, they'd never end. Wait.
I also noticed the 6-mana Doomblade that manuses for 1.
Yeah.
Like, it's great, right?
Sometimes it's just, like, god awful. Like, I saw Chris had it stranded in his hand against you, and he's just like...
Oh, yeah, but I was playing Mono Black, so that's, like, that's stranded for a totally different reason.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
not the whole, oh, it's a 6-mana Doomblade. That's the, my yeah, opponent has no non-black creatures.
I'm not saying it's bad. I'm just saying I thought it was really funny.
Yeah.
That, like, so he was ready to start going off on you, and then I read that card, and he just looks at me, and he's like... Nope.
I can't wait when we draft this and someone puts, like, a Call the Bloodline control deck together and they're just, every turn, they're making 1/1 lifelinkers and casting, like, a Fiery Temper and a Dark Withering and an Ichor Slick and just, like, every turn they're killing all their opponents' shit. That's gonna be really fun to watch the salt bleed from every orifice as they frustratedly slam their aggressive creatures into play and then they eventually get combo killed with an increasing... Vengeance or Burning Vengeance and Gravecrawler. I think that sounds super sweet. I'm excited for it. That's gonna happen someday.
Yo,
people are gonna.
I mean, Call of Bloodline was really good all day. I noticed that.
Super sick. I think it was the best card in the entire limited format. Call of Bloodline is my favorite
of
card.
the one it was in. Or
yeah, and then Shadows. I thought it was the best. I know. I'm sure it was the best uncommon.
Yeah.
I thought it might be the best card, in my opinion.
Even better than Avacyn, because Avacyn's pretty
sick. Avacyn's pretty sick. The Call of Bloodline was dumb, so
I don't know.
It's close. It's closer than it should have been for a Mythic Angel.
Write that down, boys.
Well, and talking about Call of Bloodline, like, leading into Madness stuff, Alec, you brought up to me earlier today that you thought, at least you didn't see... as many enablers as you thought you wanted for all the Madness cards that were in there. Am I quoting you correctly?
More accurately, that the disparity between the enablers was...
Like, quality?
Yeah, because, like, Undertaker was fucking dumb.
Yeah, Undertaker was great.
Like, Undertaker was sweet. Really great. Tormenting Voice was really not.
Interesting.
Yeah,
interesting.
Not for me, anyway.
Undertaker was really good. I enjoyed... I don't think I ever activated Undertaker, but, like, I could have sometimes, and that was, like, good enough for me.
Yeah.
Great.
Well, I mean, you also tortured Existence in that same deck, so it's, like, sometimes you just did that, you know.
Yeah. But you're not wrong.
Yeah. That's a... And maybe there could be a couple more, but I don't know exactly how many Madness cards are actually in here.
Well, I did the numbers.
Oh,
so,
shit!
Of course you did.
Yeah.
He has the numbers, guys!
There are 19 cards in the cube that have the word Madness on them. And there's 26 cards that enable Madness that are discard outlets.
That should be enough, right?
Yeah, that's perfect. I mean, there's a number of it. Now, not all of the enablers are, like, the best way to enable Madness, right? Like, I included cards like Compulsive Research. Spending 3 mana on your research also spending... Oh, did you?
I did that.
Oh, that's
awesome.
Dope. That's dope. Okay, so I mean, but like, when you say you have something like Welcome to the Fold and Compulsive Research, you're not often spending the 3 mana, at least the way the format is right now. You're just not going to be able to spend 3 mana to Compulsive Research and then spend the blue and like 5 mana to steal their dude, you know, with Welcome to the Fold, right? Like, that's not efficient at all. You'd rather go... pay one to my Call of the Bloodline, make a vampire, spend 4 on my Welcome to the Fold, steal your guy. Right? You know, that's way more efficient. So...
I also got to Compulsive Research and discard Haunted Dead and Prize of Malcolm.
That... Dude, that's savage.
That felt so good. That, I mean, it was a fucking 3-man ancestral recall.
Oh man, that's awesome.
I played a lot of zombies in standard. That sounds marvelous.
Yeah, so hot. So I mean, like, I included everything that said discard a card on it, right? So I mean, realistically, still though, there's probably of the 26 enablers, there's probably still like 19 or 20 that are actually like very good for madness. Like they're there to make madness work, right?
Yeah,
so it should be an even split. I don't know.
I don't think the number was bad. Yeah. Well, I will say, just looking at, there's not a lot of red ones.
No, there are more.
A bunch of them were vampires that we cut.
Yeah, I would say most of them, I think, are black, right?
There's a larger density in black, and actually there's probably, like, there's a handful in blue. Because there's a couple of Just the Winds, there's Welcome to the Fold.
Enablers.
Oh, enablers?
Enablers.
They're undoubtedly all in black and blue. Like, a lot of the discard outlets.
Yeah, and then there's one in white that we know for sure.
Yeah, Stern Constable is the only one in white, so.
Yeah, that's...
White has so few things that cross-synergize with the rest of this cube.
Yeah, it was like humans or bust, right? It's humans / tokens, and that's it.
Yeah, whichever one you want.
100%. Yeah, yeah. And even all of the token enablers are like 90% human. So like there's a few spirit cards that do it, but like most of it was humans. So like humans mattering. And I know that like Swifty brought up to us. He's like, you know what card was stellar in original triple Innistrad draft that was garbage in this cube? Was Slayer of the Wicked. He's like, there are way too many humans running around where this guy just didn't have a target to hit. He's like, I thought it was going to be one of the best cards in my deck, and most of the time I just kept it in my hand because I couldn't kill anything with it.
Keep that shit in your sideboard, boy.
Yeah.
It was also a 4-mana 3/2. There were plenty of times where you were just so dead by the time you cast that it wasn't even good.
Fair. I mean, it just was interesting to hear him say, like, considering that I emulated a lot of the Innistrad draft archetypes and stuff, like, that card being a house in that format was so, there's such a disparity between its quality there and here.
Yeah, the fact that it was just hot garbage.
Yeah, he said it just was never good for him, so.
Well, because I had it in the sideboard of my deck.
Yeah.
The second one that I did, the red-white one.
Yeah.
I never boarded it in once.
I'm surprised in our matchup you didn't board it in against me being tribal zombie.
I didn't need to.
I just had to pick. Well, isn't your deck just this big?
No, as in, like, you were zombies. So my best strategy was to beat you to death.
Yeah.
You never played anything that I felt threatened by inherently.
Sure, yeah.
The fucking Skeleton Lord, I couldn't even get it with that. And I got really mad about that. The Death Baron or whatever that
was. It's a zombie.
Oh, is he?
Yeah. He buffs skeletons, but he himself is not a skeleton.
Indeed.
Well, that was a flavor miss, because he looks like a little bitch.
Yeah.
I guess you can't be a zombie and a skeleton. I guess it has to be one or the other.
That's all right, true.
I take
although,
it all back.
Although, I mean, in Amonkhet, you can now be a zombie and a human, so.
That's true.
It's kind of dope. Excited. Like, I can't wait to jam now, all of the embalmed guys in there.
See, but that's okay, because now I'm just being specific.
Yeah.
Like, you know, this is a zombie cat. It is a cat, or was a cat, and now it is a zombie of a cat.
Yeah.
This is a human, or it was a human, but now it is undead, so it is a zombie human.
Right. You can't be a zombie skeleton.
Yeah. I guess it is a little upsetting that, Cemetery Reaper fucking buffs this guy, and so does Thalia's Lieutenant.
So, see, I actually think the release of Amonkhet is gonna seriously help this cube, and it's a white thing. Because if there are too many humans, if the things are too aggressive, then I think Amonkhet's gonna be a really big deal when it's got these cool white flashback spells, and these graveyard enablers, and these, you know, cycling cards, and all that shit. Like, all that's gonna really help fill in white.
And we can disorient people with those fucking awful incantations.
I love those incantations, I think those are dope.
Is that what they're called?
Invocations.
Invocations.
Yeah. No, I'm not. No.
Ugh.
Well, when we go to spoiler time, which will be coming up soon, we'll do a spoiler episode for that. Another set review. I can't wait to just
shit all of the invocations.
The black ones are great. The black and some the chain lightning looks good too.
Yeah,
and
like stuff the like red that.
One. But my god, do the blue and white ones look horrendous.
Yeah, how do you feel about the vertical power and toughness thing?
Dope.
No.
Yeah.
You don't mean that.
I think it's a little weird.
It's Mason, of course he does.
That they kind of look like fractions. I think it's a little weird. But it's dope. I don't inherently hate magic cards when they look different, I guess. Fuck. Like, I thought Expeditions looked dope.
Spoken like a true child. As soon as change comes, you're supposed to hate it. That's called being an adult, Mason. And someday, you're gonna understand the way we do.
I did play Yu-Gi-Oh for some amount of time, but yeah, I don't think these look like Yu-Gi-Oh cards. I think they just look like goofy, stupid magic cards that are fine. Like, yeah.
All I'm saying is I'm gonna be super stoked if I get the Force of Will out of it.
Yeah,
I think that
it's still Force of Will, and I'd like to disorient someone in a Legacy turn.
I was thinking, how sick would it be, like, once the second set of Amonkhet comes out and they release Nicol Bolas, how sick would it be if, under some camera match, someone taps out for their 9-mana fucking 7-colored Nicol Bolas, and then it gets dazed?
They make two more colors for this card.
it's big. Okay. Nicol Bolas. All right. Man, he's bringing the thunder.
Yeah, he's not just a planeswalker. He's like the new god type. And he gets dazed like a bitch.
He's like planeswalker, god, enchantment artifact, zombie, human, dragon, cat. Seven different colors. 11 colored symbols. Can only be cast with, you know...
You must sacrifice 10 other permanents.
And then he comes including down a living and... human. Yeah. Should have had one extra floating. Dazed.
Dookie, what did we learn about you playing on the table?
You're going to knock over drinks, and Josh is going to murder you.
Josh will not murder her.
Murder!
I threatened to skin her face off the other day.
You did not!
Yes, I did.
Nice. I swear to God, if I ever hear you do that, I will cut off your balls with a fucking cheese grater.
That's really violent, guys.
I'm going to put your nuts in a slap chop.
In our first... Wow, I guess you'd really be slapping your troubles away with a slap chop.
Oh, God.
That guy went to jail for beating a hooker.
The slap chop guy?
Yeah. No way. He was originally the Sham Wow guy. No, I take that back. He was the slap chop guy first. Yeah, I'm pretty sure he went to jail for beating up a hooker.
Wow.
Yeah. I don't know if he actually went to jail. I know he got in trouble for it. I'm pretty sure he went to jail for it.
Yeah.
Well, you can't just beat hookers. Like, that's not okay. No.
Depends on who you are. I mean, if you're like a mayor or
jeez.
A congressman or something. Dude, you can do whatever you want if you're important. Fucking smoke crack. Who cares? You know how many times the fucking, like, governor of Chicago has been caught, like, doing hard drugs? We still fucking have them for some reason.
Well, yeah, in jail.
You know how long I would stick with my job if they caught me literally doing heroin in the bathroom? Not very fucking long. It certainly wouldn't have to get voted on. Just fire my ass. Whoopsie.
I guess that's true.
Anyway. Enough political talk.
Jeez.
I got to pick one pack on Skullclamp in one of our drafts.
That yeah, everybody was telling me, they're like, dude, Skullclamp can't be in here. That's way too powerful.
It was dope. I also killed myself with Skullclamp once because I drew like 6 or 7 extra cards with it, and then Chris Xaxes milled me.
Yep.
It was dope.
That's the delicate dance you do against the mill deck. Like,
it always feels like a delicate dance because you're like, oh, I drew an extra card and died because of it.
Yep.
I've never seen someone, like, get milled to death while they had, like, a Think Twice or something on the stack, but I've always wanted to. I did notice, though, I really think, you know, I know you had Laboratory Maniac in for a little while, and then you said you thought no one would ever win with it, so you dropped it. I actually think it wouldn't be that hard to win with that card.
Yeah, I think it's time to bring back Lab Man. There are definitely times where I could have milled my deck out, and I would have been stoked to have had a Lab Man.
That's so cool! I also think that's another reason to have... fucking Unburial Rites in, because you can mill yourself, flip over your reanimator spell, dope, and reanimate the other thing you flipped into the graveyard.
Oh.
That's so sick.
I want to do that, too.
You can also mill away everything, and then just Memories Journey, shuffle that guy back in. That's the card you left in your deck. You draw it, play it, cast the thing twice from your graveyard, win that way. But
sure. Okay.
I don't think there was two Memories Journeys in here. But
no, there's only one.
So that's something I think I would actually, like, not
you'd, like,
mind.
See as a multiple?
Yeah, and I know it's a card that's going to sit on people's boards a lot of the time, but it's such an interesting piece that never feels really that oppressive, I don't think. But when you're playing a careful, measured game of Magic, like, it can be really nice to have that failsafe.
Sure.
And I don't think there should be, like, a bunch of runic repetitions or anything. Like, that loop can get kind of silly if you're playing in some kind of a matchup. Like,
yeah.
In Standard, I used to play with Memory's Journey, Runic Repetition, and Mystic Retrieval as my, like, engine way to never make sure that I lost to myself.
Yeah.
And I assembled that, like, sort of that contraption in our last draft, and it was sweet. It just felt good to feel like you were rewarded for kind of drafting those cards, putting them in your deck, like, accepting that Memory's Journey is never going to kill something or help you survive on the board. But, like, it gives you that little redundancy, that little way.
Because you're breathing room, you don't kill yourself.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. That's nice.
And just go ham on whatever your strategy is.
Yeah.
I agree. Having played the self-mill deck and stuff, it would have been nice to rebuy some of my toys.
Okay.
And I think it's an interesting way to try and hate on people milling you. Like, ha, fuck face, I'm going to put three back. Or if they do mill you, then you can get back your game winner or whatever it was you were looking for. And even when Mason played, he just put fucking three Festering Roots back once.
Yeah.
Ha ha, get wrecked, you know?
What had finally come down to in my last match when I said that I lost to our friend David, what it ultimately came down to is I had two cards left in my deck. Somehow one of them was one of my spider spawnings. And I needed it to be like the third card in my deck instead of the second, and I fucking died because of it.
Oh.
But I had just gotten to the point where I was going to be able to set up spider spawning, runic repetition,
Memory's Journey,
every single turn for the rest of the game.
Yeah,
and I finally got to that point, and he peeled like three cards off the top in one turn to kill me. So it was a little bit of a tilt, but we had finally gotten to that point, and I was like super hyped that I was finally going to get to assemble the machine, and it didn't quite work out. But man, I felt clever for a minute before I got murdered. Whew, let me tell you. So that, yeah, those are the kinds of like really interesting gameplay mechanics that come up with the graveyard that I think are really cool about this cube. That I would like to see more of, and especially like interactions with Lab Maniac and Unburial Rites and Memory's Journey and Mystic Retrieval, like, flashback spell, like that. That's all fucking sweet.
Can you point that card at someone else?
Yes, you can.
So they play the Lab Maniac, be like, ha ha, gotcha, bitch.
Yep. Yeah. If they go like, play Lab Man. Flash this back, you'd be like, in response, put three lands back on your deck.
Is it instant too?
It is.
Yeah, it is.
And it has flashback, and it's fucking great. That card is such a house.
Funny. Get back, nerd.
You can also use it to hate on people's graveyards. They're like, Unburial Rites this guy, and you're like, ah, fuck off. Get out of here. Shuffle that thing back into your deck. So, it is not only like a versatile little graveyard hate card,
but it's really good. It's great for the self-mill decks, too.
Yeah, so it's a cog in the wheel of the engine. It's not the engine.
Yeah.
I mean, it can be, I guess, but for most part,
it's your
endgame. It's there.
Yeah, it's kind of a jack-of-all-trades, which is nice.
You're probably not drafting it anticipating getting all the runic repetitions and Spire's Bunch, doing that forever. Mm-hmm. I mean, but
the idea that you can combo it up with runic repetitions is super sweet.
Yeah, if worst-case Ontario, the game went far enough that you had to do that, you can.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So, pretty neat stuff.
On a little bit on that subject, because you were saying you'd like to see two of those, you had mentioned to me, Mason, about the... It seemed like there was actually quite a few unnecessary multiples.
When I was playing, and this is really for diversity's sake, because I thought all the multiples were great.
Yeah.
I mean, they were all super powerful and everything. And I think there are certain multiples that are necessary, right? All the Bog Brew Witch pieces, I think you just kind of need them in the numbers. Otherwise, they're not good, and you just cut them all.
Right.
I thought the Arachnus Webs and the Arachnus Spinner were sweet. I thought that was, like, my favorite shit that I didn't really get to do that much, but, man, that was dope.
Yeah.
But ultimately, I thought, like, a lot of just the filler pieces that were in multiple felt not bad, because they were very good cards, and they were definitely, like, at the premiere of what you wanted to be doing in those archetypes.
Yeah.
But I would like to see a lot more of the kind of middle-of-the-road goofy cards from Innistrad that really are hard to justify when instead of putting in, like, some goofy flashback spell, you could just put in a second copy of a better card.
Right.
So I think just for diversity's sake, you could afford cutting off some of the multiples and just adding in cards with similar effects, maybe that are worse, that's fair, like, maybe they take a knock in power level, but are different, and apply differently.
Yeah, like instead of two Nebelgeist Heralds, we could have a Stormbound Geist.
Yeah, exactly. You know? Stuff like that. Like, things that are, you know, they're not always going to be worse. Situationally, they can be better, but, you know, just different cards. Get that real diversity out there.
Sure.
For instance, especially in, like, I was thinking about the Burning Vengeance deck a lot.
Yeah.
And it's sweet to have multiple Burning Vengeances. I like that because I think you kind of need it.
Right.
But let's say you have one Secrets of the Dead in. Like, Secrets of the Dead isn't better than Burning Vengeance. You should just cut the secrets and just play a fourth Burning Vengeance. Well, no, because you want diversity. You want other things happening in the fucking world, except, you know, I'm just going to put 11 Burning Vengeances in the red section and, like, call it a day. So I was looking at cards like all the different Bump in the Nights. And Bump in the Nights is a super sweet card, but, like, I think there's a justification for putting in a... the other red, like, Fires of Undeath. I think there's, like, a reason to put in a Fires of Undeath. It's, like, a little 2-for-1 removal spell.
Yeah.
That also... It's worse when you want to go to the face, but it's better when you want to kill creatures, and I think there's a reason to have that kind of...
Yeah.
Open-endedness with your cards.
Sure.
There are a bunch of different, like, very mediocre flashback spells that are just inherently 2-for-1s that give you something to do with your mana late in the game that maybe would solve some of the problems that people are having with the formats. That probably aren't powerful enough just in their own merit, but when you're talking about, for diversity's sake, breaking things up and just having more different cards in the cube, I think it's pretty easy to kind of slot those right in there. So.
Sure.
Well, and Fires of Undeath would actually probably just be good in this cube.
I always really like drafting it in Limited.
I mean, if we're talking about the dudes being so good, like...
Yeah.
Kill them, man. Beer small, kill them all. Just light them on fire. Why not? YOLO. So, yeah, just the kind of middle-of-the-road filler cards. Maybe not the archetype-defining ones, but... Or anything that can be replaced with a similar functional card.
Sure.
Like, maybe there's just nothing close enough to Gravecrawler that you want to take out the second Gravecrawler. Maybe it's just the only thing in the world that does what it does. And, alright, fine. But, you know, the two Geralt's Messengers, maybe you could put in some other big zombie guy.
Sure.
Like, you know... Or maybe you could put in...
Just something not zombie tribal at all that helps out a different deck. Yeah.
Or move that slot somewhere else, right? Maybe you want a Twisted Abomination as a big zombie.
Sure.
Or something to do.
Yeah.
You know, so, which I do think was a glaring omission. I think Twisted Abomination should have gotten
right. Oh, Twisted A-Bomb is dope.
He's so dope,
Swamp
right?
Cycle, and then
like,
big
Swamp
thing.
Cycling, like, gives you a zombie in your graveyard. Yeah. The card's
nuts. I'm really stoked to try out all of the... When you cycle or discard a card, cards from Anketten here.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh my
There's, because, I mean, like, that helps your madness strategies, and it's ways to put things in your yard.
Yep.
And you get, like, more enablers, mm-hmm. because they're printing cards that, like,
give you upside. Yeah, I think Anketten's going to be a huge shakeup for this cube. So
yeah.
I wouldn't mind playing it as much as we can in the next few weeks, getting a good handle on things, and then just completely, like, you know.
Shifting it.
Here's what we like about it. Let's, like, hard shift and do a big change up. Maybe we'll do an episode on that or something like that.
Sure.
Super sweet.
Cool.
Were there any other talking points you had?
I think we hit most of what I really wanted to talk about. Jim brought up the whole, like, green-white issue. He felt like... And this kind of... This goes back... Well, this goes into the... There's so many white humans that, like... Because, like, mm-hmm. in the second draft... the first draft, there was two red-white humans decks, a green-white humans deck... And a black-white humans deck, right?
Yeah.
And then the second draft, there was three red-white humans decks and a black-white humans deck.
I think the obvious thing there is that anytime you're playing white, you're playing humans.
Right. And I'm not... I'm not saying that there was, like...
Yeah, we had, what, as many as four at the table at one time?
Yeah, both drafts, yeah. But Jim's complaint was that he felt that maybe the green-white humans deck just was not as good as the red-white one, or just didn't have the same kind of reach... Or a way to, like, overpower what your opponent was doing. Now, this is a sample size of one draft, three matches with this deck, right? It was the only one that ever showed up. So, like, mm-hmm. we're talking very small sample size. But he was talking about things like he wanted maybe just actual giant growths in there. Like, he said he felt like the deck needed maybe some combat tricks to, like, survive the pointed removal, that also could push damage, that also could kill guys in combat. Like, he felt like the guys just never either got big enough or couldn't go around or push enough damage quickly compared to the other aggro decks in the room.
Interesting. I always thought the creatures in this deck were fucking huge, so I don't...
Yeah, I don't... I didn't get to see a lot of it, so I really don't know. And, like, looking just on paper at the cube, like, I wouldn't have thought that those would be his results. Like... So, I don't know.
The difference between that deck and the red-white human deck is, right, instead of burning people out, like, with, you know, spells that, you know, hit their face, you're casting Travel Prep and just making your guys huge. Like, that, I think, is
right.
The
Right, and he said he didn't think Travel Prep was that good. And I don't know that I agree with that.
What are you doing? Yeah. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
No, that's
a man that can't appreciate Travel Prep shouldn't be playing green-white humans, all right? That's facts. That is... Ugh. My goodness. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know exactly where that's at. I think saying that it's a worse humans deck than red-white seems a little bizarre because it's a different humans deck. It's a different kind of aggro deck. It's more of a get big and pound on your opponent for a while rather than, you know, the kind of slip in there, sneak in where you can, and then finish them off in some tricksy little way, like, you know, Thatcher's Revolts or Kesk Malcontents or whatever you got going on.
I mean, I think it probably is worse, but not so, like, disparagingly that...
I think its clock is generally slower, right?
I think the red-white deck comes in generally slower. Anytime you're looking at a green-based aggro deck, I think you're inherently looking at a deck that has more of an ability to fight other aggro decks.
Yeah.
Because you're also putting guys onto the board at the same rate your opponent is, but your guys are going to be bigger a large percentage of the time.
Or at least better.
Yeah. I mean, if your opponent starts off with a fucking Reckless Waif and you immediately slam an Evanescence Pilgrim, I think you're winning pretty hard at that point. That's turn one. Yeah. Then they go ahead and they slam their whatever, they attack you for one with their Reckless Waif, you're obviously not going to block, you untap and you slam an even bigger guy, and now they're maybe a turn or two away from being able to get in a good attack.
Yeah.
Because you're getting to spend extra mana.
Yeah.
And then you're sitting there with an Avacyn's Pilgrim, and it doesn't matter because you have that extra body on the board for when you slam your Champion of Lamphole, Thalia's Lieutenant, Travel Preparations. And now you've got, like, a sizable advantage from this one drop that you played. So I think, like, that kind of play pattern is super common and happens all the time. Anytime you look at a green aggro deck, if you look at a green aggro deck in a regular Legacy Cube, you're talking about instead of playing a 3-drop red guy. Someone help me out here. 3-drop red creature. I don't know.
Hanawar Lancer.
Sure. Or Hanawar Garrison, or whatever it is.
Yeah.
You're playing a Kitchen Finks. It's like, well, you're definitely not killing someone as fast with that Kitchen Finks, but you're surviving Wrath, you're gaining life, you're getting an inherent 2-for-1 out of it.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, it's like, well, you know, Kitchen Finks isn't a great aggressive creature, and it goes right back to that Viscerous Seer trading with a Keswick Prowler thing that I was talking about before. It's like, you're right. Ideally, when you're looking at this card, like, you might not be thinking, oh, this fits into slot A, tab B, whatever. Instead, you're just looking at how the game is playing out, and you're going, this is what I need this card to do, and it's doing it just fine, so I'm going to play it as such.
I would love to have a
Anytime you're playing any kind of synergy-based creature deck, and you're playing against someone really aggressive, you need to figure out how you're going to win. If you can win the late game just off the merit of whatever you have in your deck...
Yeah.
Then none of your cards actually need to do their little synergistic song and dance. They can just get on the board, trade off, and act like these little pseudo-removal spells, you know? And that's the reason the self-mill deck is so good, because you slam a Screeching Scob, it's a 2-1 for 2 that you immediately trade off, and you're hoping that it, you know, its only job was to put a couple creatures in your graveyard anyway.
Or it can put some pressure on them early, like, either or. But yeah, it was the same deal. When I did it, I was like, okay, it just needs to do a thing.
Yeah.
Like, if that had just been 2-mana mill 4, I'd have still played it.
Yep.
But this time I get a little body. It helps keep me alive, which actually didn't come up as much as I thought it would.
Yeah.
Especially when it was
a matchup dependent.
Yeah, well, especially when it's an Elite Inquisitor and all of them were zombies. I was like, well, this is bad.
Yeah, Elite Inquisitor does not feel good.
Yeah. But whatever the case, it was, as you were saying just a moment ago, doing exactly what I needed to do. Now, it did reward me on the synergy level.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, I mean, I guess it's a bit different in that situation. Mm-hmm. But...
I mean, it really comes down to, like, you know, you can build your deck and visualize things going one way, but a totally separate skill... Like, creating a cohesive deck in a limited draft environment is a huge part of the skill, right? We talk all the time about how drafting well is not something that people focus on enough. But being able to adapt your strategy in the middle of a game just based on what your opening hand looked like is a big deal. And figuring out how you're going to win the game, executing whatever game plan you have to.
Yeah.
To either keep yourself alive or deal with whatever your opponent's doing, right? How often do we play aggro decks and aggro mirrors and one person winds up being the, quote, control deck? Either because they drew all their removal spells and they drew pretty creature light.
Yeah, well,
or because they're on the draw or whatever it is.
Yeah, it always goes back to, like, Mike Flores' article, Who's the Beatdown? At multiple junctures in the game, that role can switch. And you have to be able to discern when that happens to you and how to deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Mm-hmm. So I think that's an important part. I mean, like, we focus so much on the drafting, you have to pay attention to the gameplay, too. Like, when you die on turn 4 to some bomb that you didn't see coming, but you blew your 2 removal spells on their 1 and 2 drop because you wanted to be able to get in with your, you know, bear or whatever, you have only yourself to blame for that. Like, it happened.
Yeah. Yep.
Got fucked.
Yes, it's easy to overextend into something like that and be like, no, this is why this is bad. No, that is why you are bad.
Overall, I thought there were some changes to be made, but I really liked the way the format played. I thought it felt really sweet. I thought the games were all really interactive. And, yeah, like, I was dying sometimes to aggro draws, but I thought that was in the minority, not the majority. So.
Sure.
I thought with some tweaks and a lot more gameplay,
yeah,
like a lot more practice and a lot more interplay, that we could fix a lot of those problems.
Sure. So,
I really liked it, man. I thought it was super sweet. And we're going to upload some pictures of the insane presentation you gave us with the, oh my god, he had a box, there were envelopes, there was Eldritch, I think he put a spider in the box and just crawled right out at the beginning. It was terrifying.
That didn't happen.
Chris screamed like a little girl. It was, oh.
That did god. Happen.
It was, let me just say,
the screaming
really,
yeah, Chris always really screams a like delight. A little girl.
Really a delight. That's because he's a little girl at heart.
Yeah. Right, yeah, no, I, to explain a little bit on that, you'll get to see the pictures, but to, like, really, like, give it some context.
It's the nerdiest thing I've ever seen in my entire life.
As a magic
prefaced.
Yeah. I got this really sweet old wooden box, and I painted the Star Sigil to, it's basically the gateway sigil for Lovecraftian lore, like, to the other plane where all of the, you know, the Elder Gods all hail from. And then each pack was wrapped in pages from all of Lovecraft's works. And then I hand-painted all of the Lovecraftian bestiary symbology on each of the, a different symbol on each of the
symbology?
Packs. Yes.
Yeah. Symbology.
Symbology is a word.
Symbolism. What's the...
No.
Symbolism.
No. Symbology.
Symbology is a word.
I know it is, but... Oh. That...
That's not what I was going for. It's
the
actually...
God saints?
Oh. I...
Oh, are you referencing us right now?
Yeah, when Defoe...
Ah, god damn it.
I get you,
nobody?
But I... Yeah, I mean...
Did you guys listen to the last episode of Top Level Podcast where Patrick Chapin rips into Mike Flores on his use of the word literally?
No.
Oh, no, but I'm sure it's great.
It was really funny, actually. I thought of you immediately when he did it. I'm sorry, we're totally ruining your thunder. Please
you did.
Continue.
No, I, you know what?
To paint the picture.
It doesn't matter.
Ruined everything like he always does with his fucking bullshit.
It's hard work, but, you know, I'm not the hero this world wants, but I'm the one they need.
Fantastic. I'm so happy for you.
And then I wax sealed all the envelopes, and it took me hours. So,
well, he was up there freebasing it with like one of those like charcoal lighter thing jobs.
Yeah, I had
a spoon. And then he comes downstairs. He's like, "Fuck that! You know, we're going industrial." Puts it in the pan with boiling water.
Yep, on the stove. I just melted an entire pot of wax and then started pouring them on the envelopes and sealing them all. So
that's why it started to look so different on like half the envelopes.
Well, eventually.
No, like some of them, you can tell where there was a couple trial runs, right? And then just a couple of them, like even doing it down here with like a better like pouring tool and everything, it's still just like sometimes just spilled fucking everywhere. So it just.
Right. Well, there were a couple that were like really.
I am not a practiced monk from the medieval area when everything had to be sealed by wax. I haven't done this before. This was the first trial run.
See, when I see them do it on Game of Thrones, they have like these little wax sticks that they just kind of heat up and just kind of.
Agreed. And that's what I needed. That's what I needed. But I went to, in my grand search for this stuff, knowing that I was going to do this, nowhere around here at least
sold black or red wax sticks. Because I found kits that, like, gave you the little, like, stamp seal and stuff. The stamps were all either mistletoe, a dove. One of them said love on it.
And these are my craft.
Yeah, love. I mean, that would have... Actually, that's not bad. But, like... and they were all gold or green or white wax. Yeah, green wouldn't have been so bad. But, like, again, the stamp seal, though, like, was already pre-engraved. Come to find out later, Abby tells me, my girlfriend, she's like, you know, you could have, like, gone online. They have, like, a design-your-own wax stamper thing, because that's, like, a hip thing now for people to do. And I was like, you knew I was going to do this. Why do
Like, no, I just wanted to watch you suffer for 6 hours.
Yes. Yeah. So,
and yet.
But.
Happy birthday, fucker.
Yeah, I couldn't find black. I knew I really wanted to do black wax, and I just couldn't find
that's that. Fair. I would have probably gone to, the like, sticks fucking Bed Bath & Beyond, just bought, like, one of those fruity strawberry candles, just poured it all over.
Well, that was my original intent, was just to buy, like, a candle or whatever, but that I found a big old bag of it's granulated wax, and it's to make homemade candles without melting the wax. You just stick a wick in the granulated wax. It's like sand, but you can also melt it. I melted that, and... It's dope. Much more liquidy, like, it's very viscous compared to, like, the sticks, which are much thicker. That's and dope. So that's why some of them, that you'll see pictures, are just, like, poured everywhere. So,
well, it was super sick. It was incredible. I mean, like, the reveal was A+.
Yeah.
For every...
I'm glad that people appreciated it, because it took me forever, and I had a lot of fun doing it. Like, I was really hyped. It was really great.
You
were having fun for a few times.
One of my favorite, I asked you, I was like, holy shit, you actually, like, cut up your books? He's like, yeah, I own the whole, you know, compendium. I own everything he's ever written. I was like, wow, that's, so now you don't anymore, huh? Because you kind of cut them all up. He's like, no, I own two. Jesus.
Yeah.
Who are you? All
right. I'm an avid fan. What can I say?
Apparently, my God.
Yeah. No, the second book that I had, the one that I cut up, was actually, like, it was a smaller sampling, and then I have, like, a hardbound copy of, like, everything he's ever done. So that's the one I actually, you know, read from. But no, that was a fun experiment. I really enjoyed, like, doing a little something extra to make it, like, an experience rather than just, like, let's all sit down at a table and draft some cardboard.
I mean, really,
like,
definitely succeeded.
Yeah.
It was fantastic.
I think the whole, like, because I've read discussions online about, like, people, like, making packs for their cube because they like the simulation of, like, cracking open a pack during a draft. And I looked into a lot of ways to do that. And I wasn't sure at first if it'd be, too, like, too cumbersome. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's like, what's the point? Like, it's cube, it's not the same thing. Like, we're not actually cracking packs, why go to the trouble? But I thought it was pretty cool, and people seem to enjoy it. So, it'll be a fun thing to, like, try again sometime with in a different, you know, cube experience.
Hell
so.
Yeah. The effort's always worth it, everybody at home.
Yep. That is not true.
Remember that. Life is effort.
Alec can regale you on some stories.
Let me tell you about putting forth a good effort. I'm getting shat upon.
All right, I think that's where we're going to cut it for today.
Yeah.
Before Alec gets too melancholy.
So, thanks to all of you listening about this pet project of mine.
It was so much fun.
I think our next episode, I don't know, by the time we sit down to record again, might actually be, we might have the full Almond Kit spoilers, so Woo-hoo! We might do a set review.
I'm so excited.
And I was talking to Jim House with our good friend, and I want to get him on the cast. Maybe we'll have him as a guest star for that to give some extra insight.
Yeah, for sure.
And then we'll bring back our friend Ryan. We might get him to call in down from Tennessee.
Yeah, he moved now, so he's the worst. We're going to talk shit about him a lot. Fuck that guy. He's a piece of shit. Also, he moved, and therefore it's dead to me.
Yeah, so... But and we're gonna cool. We are gonna talk at some point. A little preview. We're gonna get our friend Jim to come on just to talk about his Commander Cube, which is
the super funnest thing ever.
Yeah, there's a lot
God,
of you
great.
On you know that are on MTG Salvation and the Cube Reddit and such that you know have Commander Cubes. I've read a lot of stuff about that, so it's not an uncommon format, but it's super sweet, and I don't think a lot of people like really delve into what a Commander Cube entails. So that'll be fun to talk about at some point too. So.
Absolutely.
Thanks for listening. This is us signing off. Hit us up on social media as per usual.